This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and rewatch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Hey, it's Mark Schlereth with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Outdoor America with Tommy Bench. Outdoor America is brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. Now, here's the host of Outdoor America, Tommy Bench.
It is yet another beautiful day in the Ozarks. And, you know, we're right in the middle of prime time, fish catching, deer hunting. A lot of good things are going on. The only problem about it is our Mother Nature don't know which way to go, I don't think. We got cold weather. We had a big cold front move in. Then all of a sudden now we've got highs in the 80s. Yeah, you heard me right. Highs in the 80s in November. Here we are approaching opening weekend of, it is, it's opening weekend of firearm season. And here we got these crazy, crazy warm temperatures. So, you know, it's just, we just got to give what God gives us, right? But, you know, the fish still got to bite and deer still got to eat. They still got to live somehow. But I've got a great guest for you this week. You've heard him before, folks. He's been on here before. He's a good friend of mine. He's a fellow smallmouth fishing guide, as well as other things. He's really good at some other fish too. But anyway, welcome to the show, Bill Smith.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, it's going to be great. You know, I was going to mention, we take a couple of guys that are the same. You know, we got a good buddy of mine that we've both been taking for years, Mark, and I just recently took him as well as you did. And I was curious to hear how your trip went. I know you said you caught lots of fish, and just kind of curious, getting you know, touch base with how the fishing is, what they're doing whenever it goes from extreme cold back to warm again. But let's start in with how did your trip go with our good buddy Mark?
Well, it went good. It was, of course, different than last year. You know, and last year was my first time with Mark. And but this year, our numbers was way above the total amount of catch, total fish. Just not the bigger fish, the quality fish like he caught last year. You know, last year he caught a 20-inch smallmouth and one about 16 and that, and then along those average. Yeah, that, and the 20-inch was such a classic bite as he threw that weightless wacky across the set of logs and that big old girl just come rolled out right on it, just the way you love to see it. This year and then last year was we catching more fish on the wood. You know, it's about the same time of year. Water this year lower than it was last year and clearer this year than it was last year. And then this year, then, you know, our fish was more moved into the holes of the water. They were off those rock banks and that. We didn't hardly catch anything off the wood. That just, you know, and that's typical how it goes. And yeah, probably you know, smallmouth. This one probably not over 15 inch fish, but man, the numbers that, and gosh, I don't know how many he caught. He caught just a ton of smallmouth action, you know, as we would go from hole to hole, you know, your deeper pools of water, and concentrating on where the shade was at because of the really clear water. I mean, we're seeing the bottom in well over 15 feet of water. I'm seeing the bottom of the river.
That's unbelievable.
Yes. And along with that, and then last year, that bite, like I said, we was primarily on that weightless wacky worm, and of course the Ned, you know, the DRD worm. You're always going to catch fish on it. That's you know, and that's a good fish locator, you know, where are they at? Yeah. Because you're going to get bit on that bait. This year, when we finally started switching up the spinner bait, the was throwing a spinner bait, and that was the best bite was on it. And he also picked up a about a 16, 17 inch walleye and a nice chain pickerel. So that kind of mixed it up. And with the species and the action. So we had a great day.
Well, that sounds like an amazing day right there. You know, we don't have an opportunity to have those chain pickerels and walleye like what you have there on the current river. You're truly blessed, that's for sure. And I am too. I'm not going to say I'm not blessed because, you know, we were talking about, you were just mentioned how you guys didn't catch really any really big fish, but you caught a lot of fish. And I tell my clients, anyone that knows me, knows I'm not a numbers guy. I'm more of a quality over quantity. And so I throw a lot bigger baits. And, you know, like you said, that net will flat out catch them. And I could probably catch the numbers, but it seems like I'm typically trying to catch that quality bite. So it's almost like a swing for the fences. You know what I mean? It's not like, hey, we're just going to go out and catch a bunch of fish. And if we happen to stumble across the big one, so be it. I kind of go out there and target those bigger fish and just try to catch them. So we want to catch 15, 20 fish a day some days. Some days it's better and you'll catch 30 or 40 fish. But
yeah.
You know, but the quality is usually there. And like you said, them deeper pools, I'm putting these clients around where I know these big fish are living the majority of their life and not just feeding, you know, that's where they're at. So
yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah. You said spinnerbait.
And that spinnerbait. And I've been getting, you know, that water temperature's dropped. And it dropped, and gosh, I wish I had my numbers written down, but I know that, you know, from week to week, I've seen almost a 10-degree drop, you know, and then come right back up with this weather like you're talking about. You know, I know I've seen 52 degrees on the, I believe, that Monday and Tuesday previous of that Friday trip with Mark, and then it was back up on that day, up into the 60, 62 and stuff. And this week it was up like that. So in the same area, it's changed 10 degrees. You know, it really dropped because we had some 20-degree nights there for a few nights. And then, bam, you know, back up to warm and it's changed. But that spinnerbait at different times here in the last month has been a very good bite. I've threw some other things with along, you know, thinking it would be, and it wasn't, you know. Huh. And so
what was the key to that spinner bait as far as, was there a certain structure or a certain way you had to present it in order to get to bite, or was it just a cast and retrieve?
It was a cast and retrieve, you know. No, you didn't burn it. No, you didn't let it get down, just laying there, you know, right toward the bottom. You'd come with that retrieve just right over the structure, and it didn't really matter, you know. Most of the time we were throwing it, you know, parallel across to, or a little bit of like a 45 angle downstream, letting that spinner bait work as you are slowly just coming right along with it. And right. I pretty well throw that Jewel Jim Shad 2.0 spinner bait with, instead of a skirt, you've got a swim bait, and I do a lot of the Kytec 3.3-inch Kytec swim bait, the Tennessee Shad, and I'll dip that tail in that, you know, chartreuse spike it. That is a spinner bait that seemed to do well on current river.
That's awesome. So essentially what you did with the spinnerbait is you took the skirt off. Well, they did, but I mean, the way this is set up, it's a spinnerbait with no skirt and a swim bait on it.
That's right, and they produce it that way. That's how they come out. Dual bait comes out with it that way. You know, I'm of course I'm good friends with Gail, the owner, and fished. He's fished with me before, and this is a design that they've developed, and that's just a very good smallmouth spinner bait. I mean, it was designed for largemouth, and lower profile spinner bait, but it works very well on the river for smallmouth. And you can use the smaller swim bait, like a 2.8 inch or 3 inch or 3.3 on it, in that range of that swim bait on it. So,
is there any particular color of blades? Is it like size blades, willow leaf blades? It's Colorado. What kind of blades has got on it?
It's got the willow leaf blade on the one, and then the other one is, I'm trying to think if it's like a Colorado or a the Indiana, type rat. I wish I had one with me, and that way I could sit there and look at it and tell you. And don't change them up. It's that whatever size that is that it comes with it. I don't mess myself with that, changing that up on it. Any different blades and stuff. So.
So you say you don't change the blades on it, or you can?
I don't. I just never have messed with, like say you put a bigger size blade or smaller blades, do that variance with it. I just, I leave it like it is on that spinner bait. Okay.
Silver and blades, chrome blade, or is it chrome blades?
It's a silver and copper or gold, silver and gold. The willow is silver. Yeah, the willow is silver, and the small is a gold color.
So it's got like a big and a small willow?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
I see.
I'll tell you what, after, I'll get you a picture of it and send it to you, okay?
All right. Yeah, that sounds good. I'm just curious because I do a lot of the same stuff, but, I got these arms. They're basically just a spinnerbait arm, and then you can put your own. Your own swim bait on it. Pretty much the same principle you're talking about, and it seems to be working good. Sometimes that blade, those blades really make a difference. Sometimes I like throwing just a swim bait by itself.
Yes, and I do that too. Swim bait and that also. But anyway, we had a good trip. I had one of those. I had a client that had come back from the spring, and he brought this year last week, and he had brought his grandson. And last spring, the second day we caught some pretty good. They caught some pretty decent fish. For current river. This was one of those days that was a numbers game. We just could not, no matter what we done, we could not get anything on any of the quality fish, but man, did we catch a number. We had 100 fish day. A lot of small fish, and that's what happens a lot of times on current river with that super clear water that we get. It's spring fed river, and deep in this Ozark country, the limestone, dolomite, topography, the karst topography, and the current river can get very, very clear, gin clear.
I know exactly what you mean there, Bill, but we got to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back with more right after this on Outdoor America.
You're listening to Outdoor America, brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. More with Tommy Bench after this. You're listening to Outdoor America. Here's more with Tommy Bench.
I've got Bill Smith, smallmouth guide on the current river. And Bill, you were just talking about, the gin clear water, how tough it can be this time of year, and all the different species you guys catch down there. It's pretty amazing. I'm excited to get Kayla down there with you and maybe catch some walleye. That's something she's really looking forward to, and she's been talking about it here lately for the last month or so. So I'm going to have to get that arranged somehow to where we can do like we plan and swap some trips out and get down there and get you up here for some big old smallies.
That would be wonderful. I'll just keep all you got to do is just give me a call or show up. It don't matter. We'll make it work. It is getting that time, because of where I'm located, my targeting of walleye doesn't usually start until about this time of year or right in December when in that, as the walleye are starting to move and stage up for that upcoming spawn. And that, so it's getting that time of year. You know, I'm talking to my fishing buddies and different ones, and they've been, you know, going and targeting after the walleye. And it's been, you know, that typical sporadic. Sometimes they're do fair and sometimes they're doing not good. You know, getting a few reports of big ones. You know, I did get a report of a picture of a 12 pounder that was caught the other day.
Wow.
You know, Kern River and the Black River, Kern River, 11 Point, Spring River, all that network has a native genetic strain walleye. They call it the Black River strain, and they get big. They get real big. It's nothing uncommon to hear of those or catch, you know, those 10s, 12s, 14 pounders or so every year that's being caught somewhere in the network of that, you know, all that river system. You know, it all feeds, you know, eventually feeds into the Black River in Arkansas. And so it is good. We're ready for you to come, okay?
And yeah, I can't wait.
Yes, and I know that now with the upcoming deer season and Thanksgiving stuff going on and that for this time right now, I'll probably right there at the 1st of December, I'm going to start going and getting down there and after them. So
yeah.
You've figure out when you can come, and we'll go at it, okay?
What is
and it's the techniques that I kind of use, you know, kind of resembles a lot of the same ways that we may be fishing for smallmouth. You know, we're throwing either big jigs with the swim bait, you know, jig head swim bait, or we're throwing bucktail jigs and maybe tipped with a minnow and that, and you're kind of doing that casting and that tight line snap jigging with it, and that you just position your boat different, you know, more out, you're fishing more for into that channel, or you can do a technique of where you're just vertical jigging with big heavy jigs and stuff, or trolling with deep diving crankbaits, you know, trolling baits. That's pretty well the way that I target on the walleye.
Which would be your favorite way to do that?
My favorite way is either throwing that hand-tied bucktail jigs that we tie up ourselves, you know, that maybe tipped with a minnow, or throwing that a swim bait on a heavier jig head. I'm throwing 1/2 ounce and 3/4 ounce on a 3-inch swim bait. And
you're looking for the deep water?
Yes.
Okay, yep. I see. So you're looking for the deepest water you can find. That's. I mean, but basically what I'm getting at is what separates the walleye from the smallmouth. I mean, I'm sure you're going to catch some smallmouth in the process, or vice versa.
Yes,
maybe
you do.
Some, yeah.
Yes, but that's typically what you're at that time, starting that time of year. You know, they are going to be more likely in those deeper holes, those deeper channels, and stuff like that. And it does depend too if you're on the Kern River or if you're on the Black River. Black River has a lot more structure, a lot more logs and cover in it, and than what Kern River does. Till you get, you know, even when you get down into the Arkansas part of it, it still has, to me, has more of that. But you've got some, you know, you've got deep water, and especially on that Kern River end. You know, we're fishing water a lot of times down in the Arkansas part of the Kern River, you know, 20, 25 foot deep, hole that's around 40 foot deep.
Yeah.
So,
you know, we don't have nothing like that around here. You know, the deepest holes we'll see, I would mm-hmm. say, being 100% honest, maybe touching around that 20 foot, but that's that is it. Most of our deep holes are in that 12 to 15 foot range.
Yeah, and that's the way it is on that most of the all of that what I call the middle part of Kern River and the upper part. Yeah, I know of a couple, one that I've hit 22, 23 feet on, and one the other day I was at 20 foot there, you know, on the river in that middle section, what I call the middle section of Kern River. Now
those deep holes that you're talking about, is that something the smallmouth will winter in, or are they looking more for the
They will go, and not every one, there are those particular holes that they seem to go to, and then as the years have gone along, we've had such a gravel migration infiltration into the river, some of those deep holes that they used to go to, they're not there. They don't go there anymore because it's not what it, you know, it's not what it was 20 years ago, you know, and I'm sure you've experienced that up on the Gasconade. And absolutely. I mean, there's places that were 15 foot, 20 foot deep that now the gravel is sticking out above the water level a foot or two, you know.
Wow.
It's just, that's, it is quite a dramatic change on some of it. So you know, like anywhere you're fishing, you're searching, you're looking, you know, you're that. Yeah, I've got my places that, well, they've always been there. Let's go see if they're there, you know.
Right.
And you know, and so, that. So
what kind of water temperature are you looking for as far as, you know, whenever it's, you know, wintertime, you know, because there's a certain water temperature, and I'll respond with my answer too as well. But I'm just curious on the current river. What is like that key water temperature that you really like for them, that you know they're going to be locked into the winter holes, and it should be go time. It's game on now with this.
When you're talking that winter, then you're talking getting down in the 40s when they really are getting locked into that, definitely that deep water. You know, I've seen this lower, you know, like right now until this recent warm spell, that lower, you know, mid 50s and stuff, and they're starting to move toward those areas, you know, and that, and they may be within that, you know, mile or so directions of that hole, staging up, starting to move. I'm going to say, you know, once it starts getting into that lower 50s, getting into that 40 degree temperature, that's to me when they are really starting to get locked into that deeper water.
And that's exactly that's exactly what I found as well. But the biggest problem I have, or, you know, we're talking about the big cold front we had come in, and then the big warm front changed everything up, and how much it changed. Well, last week I had the water temperature got all the way down to 47 degrees at one point.
Oh, wow. See, I haven't. Yeah.
Well, okay. So it got down to 47 degrees, and I told Kayla, I said, "Boy, it's game time now. These fish are going to start moving in, but we got to go now because they're going to start heading back as soon as this warms back up." And it went from 47 degrees within just two or three days, it was back up to 58 degrees, and it jumped up 10 degrees that quick. And then now it's you know, over 60 degrees, but it's just changed a lot. They don't know what to do. I think they're just kind of in limbo, like you were saying. They were starting to inch closer to those wintering holes. It got real cold, and they're like, okay, it's time to go. But then they stop because it warms back up, and they're just like, okay, what are we doing here? Is it time to winter, or is it time to go back, or what's going on? But anyway, we got to take a real quick break again, Bill, but we're gonna be right back. I want to talk more tactics on targeting these fish in the winter, and then what to do, what to look for, and how these folks can catch more and better fish in the wintertime, and not just think that the fishing is done. Folks, this is Outdoor America. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Boatworks, performance specialists. More with Tommy Bench after this. You're listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Bass Tank. Whatever brand of fishing electronics you need, Bass Tank carry it. Here's more with Tommy Bench.
Back, and we're talking to Bill Smith with the Scenic River Guide Service. Isn't that the name of that, Bill?
That's right, Scenic Rivers Guide Service.
That's right. I just wanted to make sure I didn't blotch it up. I was pretty sure that's what it was. And Bill, you're not just a fishing guide. Obviously, that's what you're really, really good at. But, you know, you've got such a beautiful, beautiful place down there on the current river. I hear a lot of people talking about how they'll go with you, and it's just as much a, you know, exactly what your business says. It's you know, a scenic view. You know, you give them a tour of all the history and all the beautiful landmarks, you know, across the current river, and kind of give them a little tutorial or whatever you would like to call it about the history and all the neat significant things on the current river. And that's pretty interesting all on its own.
Yeah, you know, it is, Tommy. And I'll tell anybody right here on the phone, right here on this program, right here when they come, and I'll say, now, folks, I want you to understand that Current River is not that classic trophy smallmouth fishery that a lot of other places are in that sense of the big, you know, football smallmouth, okay?
Yeah.
It's not. At one time, you might have classified it and the Jack's Fork into it, but there's some dynamics that's been going on that has changed that. And that's another conversation, you know, later at some other time. But the setting, and I have these clients that have fished all over. They've fished those premier trophy smallmouth, you know, places. And we talk about, as they're sitting there looking at these big high hilltops and bluffs and the wildlife and the scenery, and this, it's the scenery and setting that makes it such a unique, different experience that that, you know, it offers. And yeah, you know, you got to remember, it's the first river system in the nation that was set aside in 1964 to be protected. That's before the National Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. So it was such a unique, river system with all the springs and everything, and to keep it protected, that folks got involved and said, hey, we need this thing preserved. So that kind of gives you an idea about what you talked about. And yeah, I love to tell people about the history of it, what I know, what I understand, because it is a unique, one of a kind place.
So whenever you say, you know, it's protected and you know, so on and so forth, explain to the folks exactly what you're talking about. Because I know, okay, it's, as far as like, what do you mean by being protected? You know,
okay. Yeah. And that's true. I didn't really think about that because I know in my mind what I'm talking about. And eventually in 1964, legislation was passed to establish it as within the national park system. And it's called Ozark National Scenic Riverways. And there's 134 miles of the current river in Jack's Fork that are set aside under to be managed and overseen by the National Park Service. For, like I said, the first river system that was done. Now, previous of that, there was times that it was, you know, mentioned, tried to get it preserved and set aside because of its uniqueness. When the dams were proposed for it back in the 40s or whatever those dates, you know, I'd have to go back and look at the maps. There's actually maps. It was signed by the, if it was, the position was director or whatever, of the Corps engineers out of Little Rock, Arkansas. There was two dams that were proposed that was going to be built. One just north of Doniphan on the current river, and the other one would have been just downriver from what we call the two rivers, where the confluence of the Jack's Fork and the current river is at, just east of Eminence, and there would have been a dam downriver from there. So all these iconic places that we dearly love would have been underwater, and the river system would have not been what it still is now. And wow, that, so that kind of gives you an idea. It was done, and then now it's under the authority, I guess you would use, you know, of the National Park Service.
Yeah, that's
part of
very,
the Kurt River. Yeah,
yeah, that's very interesting. That's pretty neat to hear the story in the back, because I didn't know that was, I just got educated right there as well. And I don't, you know, it's really interesting. I love learning about history, things like that. It's funny because in school, I always thought history was a little bit silly. I thought, what does it matter what happened 100 years ago, 200, 500, you know, what does it even matter? You know, but as kids, you don't understand the things, and you don't appreciate the things you do later on in life, I think. You know, I know the Merrimack at one point, I think there was some legislation to dam it up as well.
Yes, same thing. And then, you know, that it was, people rose up, said, oh, it does not need to happen on this particular stream and that. So anyway, that's a little history on it. So there we go.
I wonder what their reasoning for damming it up. What purpose would that serve? You know, how would that benefit anybody to not leave it?
You know, yeah, I'm sure it was, you know, both hydroelectric power, and it has probably flood, also consideration of flood control for, gotcha, as all this watershed goes into that north, into that northeast section of the Arkansas, because it is a primary agricultural area along the watershed of the rivers of that Black River, Current River, Levin Point, down in that area. So yeah, it's very important to those folks about flood control, because it is a big, humongous agricultural area.
Well, that's very interesting, Bill. But let's, I was wanting to pick your brain just a little bit on smallmouth. You know, everyone hears all these things that I like to throw and how these tactics that I like to use for the smallmouth on the Gasconade and the Big Piney. But, you know, you there in the current river, maybe a little bit different. I know you mentioned a couple of them earlier, but do me a favor. Give me your five most favorite tactics or lures to catch smallmouth.
Well, you know, of course, right now, and I know everybody is that, of course, when I'm thinking of my clients or even myself, you know, I will have a net set up, okay, because I know I can get bit on it. Now, I may be fishing it with a net head. I may be fishing it on like the Charlie Burr slider head, or some other variants of a weedless, you know, round head with that hook and stuff like that. I'll fish it, you know, in that way. I like to set up with that. And depending on the time of year and what's going on, you know, I may have a topwater, the whopper plopper, the pop R, various different types of stick bait, you know, a walking bait, you know, that for topwater, that. Okay. Of course, I like a spinner bait, you know, and I pretty well, I've got myself down to where, and I know I need to vary a little bit more, but I, you know, always, I've been productive with that particular spinner bait that I've been talking about, okay? And that. I love to throw, when they're on it, the fluke. I love to throw a weightless fluke. That bait, at times, it's just like that fluke will trigger and make that bigger smallmouth just roll up and grab it at times. And then there's times I've seen, man, you cannot get a bite on it. You've got to go to something else. Right. And that. So I will vary. I will be setting up, you know, trying those different baits. Now, when I'm on a crankbait, that is, you know, I love to catch them on that crankbait. Usually that 6 to 8 foot depth crankbait, you know, run it down, just ticking it on the bottom, just a slow tick and that. So, I don't know if I really presented what you were after, but that's kind of what I like to do. Now, back in the day, the jig and frog, jig and crawl bait, and then the tube. Those were baits that I was, you know, dominant on. That's what I love to throw and that. Not as productive on them now as I have been in the past.
No, that's perfect. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Just kind of getting your take on what your, like, go-to was, because we all have our favorite lures, just like I do. If guys ask me, what about this? What about this? I think you can catch them. I think you can catch fish 100 different ways here. This is just the way I like to do it. And it's just like, you have your way you like to fish. I have my way I like to fish. I got my certain crankbaits, my certain topwater, so on and so forth.
Yes.
And that's what I stick with. But, hey, we got to take a real quick break again, folks. But we'll be right back with more with Bill Smith right after this on Outdoor America.
You're listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Bass Tank. Whatever brand of fishing electronics you need, Bass Tank carry it. Don't go away. We'll be right back. This is Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Baitworks. Shop where the pros shop. Here's the host of Outdoor America, Tommy Bench.
I am with Bill Smith with the Scenic River Guide Service down on the Current River, and we're talking our favorite baits, our favorite ways to catch smallmouth. And it's really interesting to see the different ways and the common, you know, some things that are very similar ways, and of how you catch them, Bill, and how I catch them, you know, on completely different river systems. You know, you have super clear, highly spring-fed water, and that is not what I have at all. I've got more of that warmer water, you know, we've got some color to it almost all year long. It's clear now. It's low and clear, so it's tough. And I don't know if you have this issue like I do, but I tell my clients, we have to stay back. You have to make long casts. If we spook them fish, it's over. You know, we want to present our bait in front of them before they see us, because once they see us, then it's really, really difficult to catch them.
Exactly, spot on. That's the thing that is that with that is being able to, you know, make a cast, lengthy cast out there, and that it is very important, because you can watch it and you can watch the smallmouth when you're seeing them, especially like when you're catching one and there's two or three or four other ones with it. Now, right then at that moment, you know, they're fired up, and I'll tell them, man, if you can reel in and throw in right above and outside of that, and one of them is going to, you know, grab that because they're fired up.
Yeah.
But then that reaches that point, and when you watch them, and when they're spooked, then they leave there, you know, they're there around there. You very seldom do you catch them. Very seldom at that point. You know,
that's
so
right.
That tells us a lot of times, you know, and yeah, we've had incidents that contradicts that. But as an overall rule, you've got to be able to make that lengthy cast and accurately, you know, and also learning how to make that to make it work with the current.
And how have you noticed, Bill? I've noticed a lot of, like you're talking about, two or three or four other fish being right there with the one you got hooked, and having your other client throw in there right next to it and catch it. Do you see that all year long, or do they only pack up like that certain times of the year?
No, I've seen them. I mean, really, I've seen it, y'all. Any time of the year, I've seen that.
Yeah,
it does. Okay. I've seen it in the early part of the year. I've seen that right during the summertime when there are in the, you know, in that typical, you know, more faster water. I've seen them come out with a whole group of smallmouth. And just recently, these last few weeks, I've been seeing that at different times that, yep. you know, that. So it doesn't, I can't really sit there and say that, oh, man, it primarily happens this time of year, because I've seen right. it happen year round, or, you know.
Same here, but I tend to see it more whenever they're moving, whenever either they're moving or they're grouped up because they're spawning, or they're grouped up because they're wintering. So when
yes,
I say that, I've been seeing it a lot here lately, and I think it's mainly because they're all kind of roaming, and not really roaming, mm-hmm. but they're moving together, knowing that, hey, it's time to go winter. And then, you know, like I said, having 47-degree water, they was like, hey, we should be there. Let's go. It's time to move. And then it warms back up, and they're like, what in the world is going on? But they're all together
yeah.
because they're all doing this. They're not doing it at the exact same time, but there's a big portion of them doing it together.
Yeah. And that, so they, and the fish do, they move. And of course, I don't know if you, I'm sitting here thinking about what we have experienced on the walleye. It's tremendous how they move.
And
that in the river system.
And you usually catch them all together?
Yeah. You know, they will be, you know, in the different holes, different places as they move. But we, in our communication with the regional biologists, as they're doing their surveys and their tagging programs and all of that, man, we have found that we knew that walleye move, but to the extent that they have, it has really just taken us back. Do you want me to tell you a quick incident of one?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. Last year, you know, one of my clients, we had caught one, and it had what the MDC calls the spaghetti tag. It's a long, thin one. That tells you it's a genetic strain of the native walleye. Okay, I didn't know that. I turned the number in. Now, we caught that walleye about 5 miles above Donovan, Missouri on the Kern River. That uh-huh. walleye was captured 3 years ago in 2020 in that same area, okay? It was 16-inch male. They took it to the hatchery, and they held it there for 10 days, you know, to get it in that for the spawn, okay? They turned uh-huh. around and took that walleye down on the 11 Point River, somewhere in that lower part of it, and that I don't know which exact, you know, site, and they turned it loose on the 11 Point. We caught that walleye 3 years later back where it was originally captured at. That's around 200 miles of river that it traveled. It went down
wow.
the 11 Point. It went into the Spring River. It went into the Black River down by Black Rock, Arkansas. It come back up the Black River and back up the Kern River. I'm roughly guessing, without looking at the map and figuring, around 200 miles of movement that walleye done. That was
oh
the third
goodness.
Or fourth one that we got feedback that done that.
Holy
they
mackerel, that
absolutely,
is impressive.
They are hardwired and they will move. Not only that, our information is that they've got some of them with the telemetry stuff in them, and they've got stations, because Arkansas and Missouri's working together on this survey about the walleye, from what I understand. They have tracked walleye moving 75 miles in one day.
That is impressive. Yeah, are they homebodies, or they're just...
They move with that spawn, and that's during that spawn time. They move. It's kind of like, you know, you hear the stories of the Pacific Northwest salmons and all those other fish
right.
species that move. It's the same thing. They're hardwired
okay.
like that.
So you think that fish would probably stay where it was at, you know, way mm-hmm. down on 11 Point, but once it's time to spawn, it's like, hey, I got to go to where I always spawn. It's back way up where you caught it.
Yeah, it went downriver. It moved, and come right back up. And that isn't the only, you know, if it was just one, you'd think, one or somebody just moved it, caught it, and come over and, you know, dumped.
Yeah,
but there was three or four that year that we knew of that we got reports back that's what took place, you know.
Wow.
So they are a very migratory fish, hardwired like that for that and that spawn. It's amazing. So that's told us that, boy, you know, last week, 2 weeks ago, man, we were catching a bunch of walleye here at this particular spot. and a few days later were not. Well, it's not that they're not biting. They've moved on, you know.
Yeah, they're not there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So now I know that's off subject of our smallmouth, but when you mention about that, you know, how that smallmouth move, and they do. They move tremendously, you know, for those seasonal times of the year. So
that's very, very interesting. You know, and I love talking about walleye just as much as I do anything. Matter of fact, I probably encourage that more than our smallmouth, because I talk about smallmouth every week. It's nice to talk about something that I don't have as much experience with and something I like to learn more about. And, you know, because everyone always asks, you have walleye? And I'm like, man, I just don't have them up this far up the river. And they're like, really? And I'm like, I don't. And you saying that makes sense. These fish, you know, these walleye that are on the Gasconade, they're in these certain areas for a reason, you know, and the conservation's told me, you know, that they like that deeper water and they like that certain structure and kind of, you know, that they just don't have that, you know, the quality of water, or maybe not the quality, but what they're looking for on my part of the river, and they do downriver. But hey, Bill, we burned through another segment here, bud, and we gotta take another real quick break. This is Outdoor America. We'll be right back.
This is Outdoor America, brought to you by Baitworks. Shop where the pros shop. More with Tommy Bench after this. This is Outdoor America, brought to you by Summit Finance Group. Here's more with Tommy Bench.
We are back with Bill Smith of Scenic River Guide Service. And Bill, we were talking walleye, you know, what the walleye do, how much they move. And you told the story about how much that one walleye moved. And I've got another story real quick that I told before. A good friend of mine had been catching these giant smallmouth. And he had told me about them. And he said it was the craziest thing. He said it was like these smallmouth were from somewhere different, like almost like they were catching smallmouth in the Gasconade. They were from Canada, you know, like they were just giant footballs, something he'd never seen before. Well, they happened to catch one that had a tag in it. And he knew his buddy that he was fishing with liked to turn them tags in, so he gave it to his buddy. Turn that tag in. Keep in mind, this come on the Gasconade. And don't quote me exactly on this, but I think it was like South Dakota or something. That fish comes so far up the Missouri River and then come from the Missouri, or maybe from the Mississippi. Maybe it was the Mississippi into the Missouri, into the Gasconade. I don't remember exactly how it happened. But this thing had traveled states. You're talking hundreds of miles. And I think what it was during the flood. It was back, I think, when we had that right after, I think it was in 2018, right after the flood of 17. So you got this massive flood that hits all these major river systems, and this fish had went all the way into the Gasconade from where it was at. It was just crazy how far this fish had come.
Yeah, isn't that? I know it. It's amazing. And if you said South Dakota, then it would have migrated, you know, would have come into the more, I guess, some way into the Missouri, you know, Missouri River, and then down it, and then into the Gasconade. And that is. So that tells us, you know, that work that these biologists, these conservation folks are doing like that, it's a lot of wealth of information, you know. It really is. And the fish will migrate and move and that. And then we know, man, right here, this old girl's been right here and she's right here. But now she will move sometimes, you know, for the spawn and for the wintering and that. So that is interesting. Very interesting.
What would you say, Bill, would be your favorite time of year to fish?
My favorite time is I love wintertime. I have always loved that, you know, not only on the production or the fish catch, it is goes along with the freshness and the setting and everything that you're out there during the wintertime.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. I just do. Now, as I'm getting older, you know, and that may change because, you know, how that cold bites you. But, you know, wear layers. Be prepared. Think about it. Take you extra dry stuff and all of that. I love the winter time, and I've always done a lot of winter fishing smallmouth. I started back in the early 80s fishing for the smallmouth in winter time, and that was passed on to me from my uncle and some of these other prolific smallmouth fisherman that was doing it before, you know, before then. And my favorite way that time of year, I'll just go ahead and jump in. I love throwing that bucktail jig, you know, down to, like, I'm usually using 6 pound test line and on the spinning reel, and I'm throwing basically a quarter ounce round head jig that we tie up ourselves with bucktail. Back in the day, a lot of marabou and, yeah, you know, casting, snap jigging that thing. I love that bite, that the way they do hit that, and that's my favorite.
Yeah, there ain't nothing better than a jig, I think. And you know, the, yeah, hair jig, whatever type of hair jig, that's something, you know, I never really got into, and I know it's, uh-huh, a classic cold water bait all across the Midwest, you know, anywhere where smallmouth live, and when it's cold, that's kind of the go-to out of, from what I've read and heard, you know, especially in years past. But, you know, I've come to use a lot of different stuff. You know, I've been throwing, uh-huh, I throw a lot of jerk baits.
Yes.
I throw jerk baits in the wintertime. Believe it or not, I'm throwing crankbaits. I had a buddy,
yes,
that said, "You're kidding me. You're catching fish on crankbaits when it's 38, 39 degrees." I said, "Yep, I have to really slow it down, but I'm still,
yes,
catching."
That's right. Correct.
Isn't that unbelievable?
I know it. You know, I've been bad to do that. I get in that one tracked mind or one tracked way, and dadgummit, sometimes we need to think outside of the box and, you know, do like what you're talking about. Don't just keep doing that one thing. Now, that may be your go-to, and that may be the, you know, the best way, but don't think about, hey, let's throw a crankbait. Try it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
throw,
that's
that crankbait.
Right.
Try this.
Yeah.
You've got to try.
What about your old Ned rig?
Yeah. You know, that's right. You know, now that we in that Ned rig, you know, you bed in the wintertime. Slow that, get that baby down there, of course, on the bottom, and just, you know, and it's a lot where they are at and presenting that to them, and, you know, and how, you know, how to work it to get that bite. And
what
that's
would
what
you say,
have to figure out.
What would you say would be your most memorable smallmouth you've ever caught? Not necessarily your biggest, your most memorable.
Most memorable. Goodness. The first one that pops into my mind, of course, it was a big one in lengthwise. As a kid, you know, a young kid, coming down the river up there above that Two Rivers area, and we were floating down through there. I mean, we're talking back in the days of prop motors, you know, not the outboard jet that we have now. That's how, yeah, far back we're talking. And threw over there with a Rebel, you know, minnow plug, and, yeah, by that log, and I did. She was like 23 inches long, something along that length.
Wow.
Skinny as can be. You know, she had spawned out and old, but that was probably one of the most memorable smallmouth that right now that just pops in my mind. That,
yeah,
one right there. As with my dad, you know, on the river back in the day as a very young kid.
That's awesome. You know, you just brought up a memory for me. My daughter, my oldest daughter, is one of the only ones of my kids that really, really, truly loves the outdoors. She loves to hunt, loves to fish, and she has never caught a true, like, giant smallmouth on the river. And I just thought about this. I'm going to take her this winter. I'm going to make it a point to take her.
Yes.
To,
yes,
get her on one of them giants. You know, I take people, strangers, every day. Every day I take strangers, uh-huh, to catch a fish. And you just really made me think about that. You was talking about being with your dad. And, you know, that means, yeah, a lot to her. And I'm going to do that, Bill. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, you
and
bet.
You'll probably be the first one I get a hold of when she catches that 20-inch.
Right. That's right.
Bill, we got to wrap things up. But you know what? I want to thank you for being on the show. And I want you to let the folks know how they can get a hold of you so they can go catch some of these big walleye, these big smallmouth, or view the beautiful Current River down there where you're at.
You can contact me, of course, by phone, call or text, 573-225-3390. You can contact me through my email, which is sr.guide.service@gmail.com. Or you can go through my Facebook site for my guide service, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, and you can drop me a message through that. Give me a holler, and we'll get you set up, okay?
There you go, folks. Get a hold of good old Bill Smith. He's a good friend, a great, great guide, an amazing person. So just get down there and go with him. You won't regret it. Folks, get out there. If you're a deer hunter, get out there. If you're a fisherman, get out there. If you're doing both, get out there. Just get outside. Take your kids out there with you. Hope to see you on the water, in the woods. Till next week, I'm Tommy Bench. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Outdoor America with Tommy Bench, brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. Bass Tank, whatever brand of fishing electronics you need, Bass Tank, carry it. And by Summit Finance Group. Join us each Saturday morning at 5 a.m. for Outdoor America with Tommy Bench on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Catch up on Outdoor America programs. Listen on demand at 610sports.com weekend programming channel. For Tommy Bench, this is Mark Miller. Thanks for listening to Outdoor America, and have a great weekend.